That little creature image that LA has picked as a hoax is up there at coasttocoastam.com. If you want to take a look at that evil little thing, just go take a look. We're going to come back and chat more with LA Marzulli. We'll also take your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, LA Marzulli with us. LA, as we continue and get to calls soon, tell us a little bit about where we get your works, like the Nephilim hybrids and the DVDs.
Sure. The best place, in fact, we've got some Coast to Coast special on the website right now, is lamarzulli.net, www.lamarzulli.net. And we're it's like a $40 deal, but you get it for $30. It's Watchers 10, plus the book Nephilim Hybrids, plus the bonus DVD, which is The Anatomy of a Hoax, which is 45 minutes. You get that for free. So it's a great deal. We're just trying to get the information out and keep the lights on and put chicken on the table at the same time.
I love it.
So, there you go.
And if you miss the website, it's linked up at coasttocoastam.com for you there. Okay, Catalina Island, what's been going on there?
Well, it just amazes me, George. I went out there a number of years ago. We've talked about this before on the show, and I discovered photographs which are from 1919. There was an amateur archaeologist who was actually employed by the High Museum between 1919 and 1921 out on the Catalina Islands, which go from Santa Barbara on the west coast of the United States, California, down to San Diego. And this man was employed by the High to go out and do archaeological digs, and that's what he did. And there was a cache of records which had gone missing for decades, and the former curator of the Catalina Island Museum, John Borregina, discovered this trunk up in the attic of the Wrigley Theater in Avalon on Catalina Island. And this made the front page of the LA Times. I got wind of this through Jim Watson's book, Mysterious Catalina. I had dinner with Jim, and he informed me that this was now discovered, and you should try to see what was there. So I called the museum, and after about 8 months of back and forth, they finally allowed me to come out, and I donated $1,000 to the museum, which I was more than happy to do, and I had access to the files. Within an hour, and I mean this, within an hour or two, I had discovered what could only, as a researcher, be called pay dirt. And talk to Stanton Friedman how many hours he spends in the archives going over before he finds a nugget of anything. To find something like that in the first hour or two was just staggering to me. And I remember walking in and meeting the curator, John Borregina, the former curator. He's no longer there. And saying, he asked me, what do you want to see first, LA? And I said, well, let me look at the photos. So they go into the vault and they bring out a museum box with manila folders in it with the photos, one from Catalina, another one from, let's say, San Miguel, another one from San Nicolas, which is the island I see from my upper deck here in the Santa Monica Mountains. And within an hour or two, I was seeing things that shouldn't be there. Those are all those photographs are reprinted in the book On the Trail of the Nephilim, Volume 1 and Volume 2. George, there's a 9-footer, and that photograph shows Ralph Glidden standing in a recently excavated grave, and in front of him is a very large skeleton. When I pointed that out to John Borregina, he was taken aback. Now, that photograph was there for other people had seen it. They had already put it, you know, in the photographic section of the Ralph Glidden collection, but no one yanked the photograph. Borregina came on the record and stated that photographs went missing, and he didn't know why or where. Photographs, because he was the guy that discovered this thing. He had pored over it before the experts came in and sanitized the collection, and some of those photographs were yanked. Well, the photograph that I saw and called Borregina over, I had it analyzed by three different analysts who looked at the photograph and stated on the record that skeleton that was in that picture was just under 9 feet tall. And that is a giant, and that shouldn't be there. And, of course, when we went back to Catalina, we show this in Watchers 10, which is incredible. The photograph, which had been buried in the archives in the Catalina Island Museum, more than likely never to see the light of day, was blown up, put on the wall, except the photograph of the giant part of the photograph was redacted. It was cropped from the picture. The giant skeleton that lay at the feet of Ralph Gooden is no longer in the picture. And it's right there. And when you turn the corner, it's the first thing you see. That's damage control, in my opinion. That is deliberate obfuscation by the powers that be, once again, to deny the people, because that's what it is. I don't care whether you buy my book or not, but you have a right to know this. You do. You have a right to know that there were nine-footers running around, not only in Catalina, but all over the Americas. Something's going on here. As Scotty Walter of America Unearthed would state that, look, the history that we've been taught is all wrong, and he's right. I completely concur with him. That it's a managed agenda, as Chuck Missler would say. It's a managed agenda that we're given these little tidbits, and Columbus discovered America. Not so fast, citizen. There are 3 million people living here. And the Native American tribes, all of them that I've spoken to, discuss and talk about in their oral traditions that there were a race of giants that they fought, that were here. So, yeah, the First Nation people are the First Nation people. I get that. I'm not disputing that. But there's a race of giants that's living here alongside them, and they go to war with them. Tribe after tribe after tribe talks about it.
Your book, Days of Chaos, you talk about regions again, why you think that we're in the last days.
Well, we sort of touched on that at the top of the last hour, but when you look at the wars and rumors of wars, the famines, pestilence, earthquakes in diverse places, troublesome times, the sights in the heavens that we're starting to see, the threat of a solar flare. Look, we just go around the globe and start looking at one of my more favorite topics is the whole Fukushima incident, which we really don't discuss over here. That's unprecedented. That's worse than Chernobyl. It is. They don't know where the fuel rods are from Reactor 4. They've lost the fuel rods. They burned through the containment shell in Reactor 4. And we can't get a straight answer out of anybody. You know, has it contaminated the water? We know that cancer is way up in Japan. We know that. There's an airline pilot, a friend of mine, who flies back and forth on a leg to Australia. And he spends a lot of time in Japan. And he says that this is, no one talks about it. No one talks about it.
They don't want to talk
about
it.
They don't want to talk about it over there. They don't.
Did you see the container over Chernobyl that they finally ended up building?
I heard about it. I have not seen a picture, but I heard about it.
Big round arch all
around. Unbelievable.
Let's go to the phones here. We'll go to Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Before we do, by the way, condolences to the family of the Tacoma police officer killed tonight responding to a domestic violence call. Jeez. But Wayne, go ahead. Good to have you with us.
Good evening, Gentleman George and Mr. Marzulli.
Hi there.
Yes, condolences to the families of those slain people, the officers in Tacoma and throughout the nation recently. You know, as the good book says, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. And I can remember seeing the documentaries both on the Ark and on the Shroud. And I think on the Ark, the best one was the Ferdinand Navarro one, when he took 16-millimeter pictures with his son in the early 1950s climbing Mount Everest. And they actually got I think it was about a 3.5 or 4 feet long piece of wood, about an 8 by 8 or 10 by 10. Off the Ark, and they had that carbon dated back to, I think it was 5,000 or 6,000 BC, something like that. Amazing. And again, with the Shroud of Turin, when they did some cleaning of that, they got some spores off of that, and they analyzed it, analyzed those spores, and what they did is they took linens and hung them up all over different areas of the Middle East and different cities, and they analyzed those and compared them, and those spores perfectly matched an area only in and around Jerusalem. Isn't that amazing?
I love that.
Fascinating.
Wayne, thank you. I appreciate that. What did you think of the tomb of Jesus apparently being found?
Well, they keep discovering all this stuff. You know, it's over there. It's just...
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It really is.
It really is. It's unbelievable.
It's exciting, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it is. Look, I've never been to the Holy Land, and every time I try to go, something happens, so... I've sort of given up on going, but I'd love to go there, and I'd love to, you know, get boots on the ground and see some of this stuff.
Well, you'd be amazing.
I would be, you know, my head be in the clouds, absolutely.
Next up, let's go to Marlo in Long Beach, California. Marlo, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning to you all.
You too.
Good morning.
Hi. I'm glad we're talking about the creature again. I remember seeing images of that a few months ago when it was first being analyzed. And I looked at that and I said, there's something wrong with this. I mean, it just doesn't look right. The legs and the wings together, it doesn't look like something real. But you have to do the analysis, and thank you for spending the time and money to take it to fruition to find the hoax nature of it. But my comment is that...
Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you. My comment has to do with when I see an image like that, or when I see something that is claimed to be something, my first intent is to look at it. If it appears to be symmetrical and pleasing to the eye and it has an inherent beauty to it, then I see it as created by source energy or God or whoever, however you want to refer to it. If it has a hideous nature or something is flawed in it, unless it's a defect in some way, then I consider that problem more likely to be man-created.
Mm.
Does that say what I wanted to say?
Well, I think you raise a very interesting point. When Richard and I saw this thing, again, I looked at Rick and I said, "Do you think it's real?" That's the first words out of my mouth. And as I'm saying, I'm thinking Revelation chapter 9, which comes out of the pit. We vacillated. We literally vacillated. I mean, I wish you could hear some of the conversations we had regarding this thing before we took it to the vet, the X-rays of the vet. And that's why when the first veterinarian came on the record and said he thought it was real, and that the round objects in the radiograph were BBs from birdshot. That's what tipped it. My truth meter, okay, it's not a hoax, it's the real deal.
Right.
But then when we actually got the creature and we were able to examine it, that's when we finally found out what we were looking at. Because 3 years prior to that, we were not able to handle it. We were not able to take new X-rays. We were not able to examine the creature. But once we got it, we examined it, and then that's why we were giving away that DVD for free, The Anatomy of a Hoax. So, you know, we did due diligence, and as George commented, as researchers, that's what we do. Sometimes we get fooled, but we go where the truth leads us. Just like the DNA evidence, if it comes back and it's all Native American, I'll let everybody know. But right now we've got samples, four samples, and it's all showing Middle Eastern or European ancestry. That rewrites history as we know it. That shouldn't be there, and yet it's there. We go where the science leads us.
L.A., the model maker for the creature must be amazing.
He's an expert taxidermist. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Expert.
His house.
When we were up in Santa Barbara and with the zoologist, and the zoologist was showing us how he made it. He deconstructed it, which was just incredible. And I'm just sitting there watching this guy. Well, look how he moved the skin over here, and he glued the skin here, and he glued the ears on, and he built up the skull, and here's the armature. I mean, the guy took the creature apart, literally, and it's up at the Santa Barbara Museum now if you want to go see it, Natural History Museum up there. I don't know where they're displaying it, but that's where we left it. Jaime donated it to them. But the guy really knew his stuff. He was a top-notch zoologist who, when we got there, he already had bats out and bat skeletons out and showed us the way it was constructed. It was incredible education. All that's on film. It's a free DVD that we're giving away when you buy Watchers 10 and Nephilim Hybrids, Anatomy of a Hoax.
We go to Annie now in Shelton, Washington. Welcome to the show. Hi, Annie.
Hi. Thank you so much for hearing me tonight.
Sure thing.
George, I hope your cold's getting better.
Oh, yeah. It's on the tail end now for
anyway, my question's pretty brief, and then I kind of have a comment. I would just like to know, how are you growing up to the young man? And did you have any illusions or fascinations or, you know, were you...
I bet you did, L.A., but what was it like for you as a kid?
Well, I grew up in the 50s and the 60s, so when the Beatles came out, my world completely changed. I was a Boy Scout. I spent my my boyhood years romping through the woods of Pennsylvania. Anytime I could go outside, you know, rain, snow, whatever. I had a trap line. I was an amateur taxidermist. I went to the Northwestern School of Taxidermy, which you got through Boy Scouts.
Aha! You were the maker of the creature.
I knew I was going to control by saying that. But yeah, I mean, all of us did that. We trapped and skinned muskrats and sold them for $1.25. And all the kids that I grew up with, my boyhood buds, we romped in the woods and built tree forts, and that's how I grew up.
Did you like astronomy and stuff? Did you have a telescope?
I was never really into the astronomy stuff, but
yeah, anyway, I was into that.
There you go.
Astronomy club, all kinds of things.
Sure.
My first telescope, my father bought me from a telescope shop on Michigan Avenue in the city of Dearborn, in a suburb of Detroit. And this guy said, you know, we've got a telescope club. They meet on Tuesday nights here at the shop. And it was kind of cool because it was an old shop with telescopes and pictures of Saturn and things like that. It was really neat.
Fascinating.
But he sprayed my wooden tripod and he sprayed it black and then he doused it with dots of white paint. And so it looked like little stars in the universe.
Oh, that's so cool.
And I just loved it. And I just loved science when I was a kid.
There you go. There you go. It's great.
I had a chemistry set. Did you ever do that?
We the neighborhood kids would all combine our chemistry sets and try to make things blow up.
There was a formula that I had. I don't have it anymore, that when you mix a few little compounds, you can make literally a tiny little volcano.
Yes, we
and
did
it would
that.
It
yeah,
would
I
just shoot
that.
Out. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Let's go to Cody in Spokane, Washington. Lots of calls from Washington State. Hi, Cody. Go ahead.
Hey, how y'all doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing, Cody.
A few weeks ago on the weekend, the other George that hosts your show had a gentleman on there. He was the son of a military man from World War II, and they were talking about he was in Greenland, and there was an alien war going on. There was these ones called the Greys, and they were fighting the reptiles or something like that.
Reptilians, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there was like an all-out war, and there was dead aliens everywhere on the ground from these two fighting. Well, they never mentioned where did the remains go. You know, what would have happened to the remains?
All right, got about 20 seconds left here, L.A. Did you ever hear about that story? What would happen to remains like that?
That's I'm sure they were disposed of in a proper manner.
Government came and take them away?
Absolutely.
That's what happens all the time. Boy, the things they know. The things they know. Well, stick around. We're going to come back with final phone calls in a moment with L.A. Marzulli right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Our final segment with L.A. Marzulli and your final calls as well. L.A., what's the rest of the year look like for you?
Well, I'm actually up on a plane on Friday going to Vancouver doing some UFO. It's one of my last shoots for the movie.
Okay, Vancouver, Canada, or U.S.?
Yeah, Vancouver, Canada, and really excited about that. There's some stories that I've already heard that are absolutely mind-blowing, and people need to hear them, and that's why I'm flying up there.
Exciting, exciting. What drives you?
The truth. Just wanting to know where we are, what all this is, where we're going, where we're headed. And, you know, in my worldview, I think I found it. But I'm constantly out there because I think everything that I do points back to the veracity and the validity of the biblical prophetic narrative. It points back to the the reality of the supernatural, and that's why I do what I do.
Where do you stand on UFO disclosure? Is it going to happen?
I think it's going to happen. I mean, it's got to. I'm just amazed that the elephant in the room, is the USA, and until we come across the line and begin to treat the subject with respect, and it's a joke the way that we treat it over here. But other nations like France and the UK and Japan and Mexico and other countries treat it with definitely more than a modicum of respect. They believe that the phenomenon is real. Look at the Cometa report that the French released a number of years ago. So the elephant in the room is us, and there's, it's almost like it's a conspiracy. It's almost like the old guard is keeping the kibosh on this thing.
Yeah.
But the old guard can't be around too much longer. I mean, they can't be. So at some point in time, the beans will have to be spilled, as it were. Has to.
It's just, it's a topic, the UFO field specifically, is a topic that just fascinates so many people.
I agree.
And I would love to get to the bottom line, the answers to that. You know, Stephen Hawking, the physicist who just seems to keep going and going, says that we need to be very careful about literally letting people know who we are and where we are. How come?
Well, this is where it gets interesting for me. And again, from my worldview, it ties back into the biblical prophetic narrative. There are scriptures which talk about that the God of the universe, who created all this thing, is going to roll it up like a scroll. Wait a minute. Is that allegory? I don't think so. The idea that we might be in a holographic universe to begin with is something that's very disconcerting to many of us. But the plasma physicists talk about it. There are people that if physicists and particle physicists look at where we are and realize that reality as we know it is not real. How does that work? Don't ask me. I don't know. But when we look at these beings that come into our space, let's call them intruders. And they are extraterrestrials because they don't originate from the planet. So when I use that term, I'm not talking about necessarily beings from Zeta Reticuli. I'm talking about, let's say, interdimensional beings. And, of course, Jacques Vallée and J. Allen Hynek held on to that position, and I do too. If we're living in a holographic universe, then it all of a sudden, in my point of view, answers a lot of puzzling questions. Like when these entities show up and they levitate people through the window, that defies all of our laws of physics as we know them. Some people would call that a miracle. I would just say that whoever these entities are, they're using technology and they have the ability to manipulate this. It's natural. It's not a big deal to them. They can do it. But to us, it's supernatural. And it is. It's supernatural. To them, it's just who they are and it's how they operate. Flying through the window, being levitated in the room, is preposterous. I spoke to a man recently who was levitated off the bed and he was about to be pulled through the wall. There was a craft, he felt there was a craft outside in the backyard, and he was levitating off the bed, he couldn't move a muscle. Classic abduction story, floating over the bed, and he cries out to Jesus, and it's like a rubber band, boom! He snaps back into the bed, and the man's terrified. But at that moment in time, he's broken the power that was trying to suck him through the wall. Well, we all know you can't get sucked through a wall. That can't be. You know, as Robert Salas talks about being levitated off the bed and right through the window, that can't be, and yet it happens. So when Hawking talks about getting back on track here, when Hawking talks about that we should be silent, I get it. But what if this is it? What if we're in a holographic universe?
Which is bizarre, but possible.
Very, very bizarre.
I mean, you think about anybody could push a button and the whole thing's gone, right?
There you go. Where are we? What are we? Where are we going? What is all this?
You know, when I was younger, and I'm talking about 14, 15 years old, L.A., I always used to think, what if our planet was almost like a speck of dust on the back of a dog or something? Did you ever think about that?
I used to lay in bed right around that same age, and I would go, okay, let's figure this out now. What does nothing look like?
Exactly.
If there's nothing, it can't be black and white because that's something. So what is nothing?
I still don't get it.
I still don't get it either.
I have talked to physicists after physicists to try to explain the so-called Big Bang, the start of the universe. And I love them all. I still don't have the answer that makes any sense to me.
No, nothing. What's interesting is it says that in the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. He was with God from the beginning. All things were made by him, and through him nothing that was made. So the Word, of course, is Yeshua, Jesus. Now, that sounds completely wacky to some people, and I get that. It's a wacky, wacky statement. But it's like somehow he spoke everything into existence. When he was here 2,000 years ago, he demonstrated that. And we can read that in the biblical prophetic narrative. So, of course, that's all supernatural stuff. And at least it offers an explanation. When Ben Stein sits down with Richard Dawkins, the premier evolutionist of the 20th and 21st centuries, where did the first self-replicating molecule come from? Dawkins has no answer. So the Big Bang theorist, no one has an answer.
Nobody has answers.
Nobody has
answers. I mean, if chickens are born from eggs, this is that old thing, if they're born from eggs and hatched from eggs, what came first?
There you go. There you go.
I mean, I just don't get it. Cornelius in Louisiana. Hey, Cornelius. Hi.
Hey, what's up there, George and L.A.?
Hey, Cornelius.
I'm going to give a quick story, then I'm going to get off and let some other people on. And thank you for Gina, your call screen. You give Tommy the night off.
Tommy's got a lot of days off this month coming up.
But anyway, L.A. sent me, I think I got the first Watchers DVD and a book. And it was on my birthday, January 5th. And that was the best birthday present I've had in years, so I just wanted to tell L.A. that little story. And I'm glad, George, y'all are sensing the end times and stuff. And like I said, I tell George all the time, L.A., I'm the God, guns, and gold man, the Bible, bullets, and beans man, and everybody needs to get ready. All right.
We met Cornelius in New Orleans at an event I was at, and he came up to us, and... it was just different. It was different. And we didn't know who he was. He's been on the show as a caller for years.
Sure.
But then he used that slogan, Bible, beans, bullets, and then we knew who he was. Jackie is in Clinton, Oklahoma now. Hi, Jackie. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, good morning, guys.
Hi.
Morning.
I have a question for you, but I just want to kind of give you a little detail behind it.
Sure.
In about 2005, I think it was late fall, I had just moved to my parents' house down in southeastern Oklahoma, and I was laying on the bed. I had it next to the window. I had the window open, looking at the stars, just nice, cool breeze, and all of a sudden, there was this crazy smell, like a skunky, musky smell, and then there was this real low noise, and it just froze me, and the next day, my father and I went outside, and we found hairs in the side of the house. So he grabbed them, and he gave them to a friend of his that has some influential friends. And a couple of months later, he comes back, and he says, well, the hairs that you gave us are unknown. There's no animal, no human, nothing that they can figure out what they are. Mm. So my question is, have you had any... stories or any investigations into the Sasquatches or the Bigfoot of southeastern Oklahoma down in the Kaimishi Mountains?
Yeah, I had a man that sent me multiple samples, allegedly from Bigfoot, and we sent them up to a lab in Canada, and they came back rodent and bear. So that's so much for that. And this, look, I believe this guy, Native American guy. He's had encounters. He sent me pictures. I looked at the pictures. Everything seemed incredibly up and up to me. But the Canadian lab, and we, I went the extra mile. I mean, I spent probably $3,000 or $4,000 on trying to find out what we were looking at here. But that's what they came up with. So it's look, even the DNA evidence, there's stuff that's going on now at two different labs, and one of the labs is absolutely perplexed at what they're looking at. They don't know. That's all I can say. They don't know what they're looking at. And that's encouraging on one hand, but it's also sort of annoying because these are the experts. And if they don't know, then where do you go? So
people are seeing something, L.A.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no question about that. Let's go next to Jeremy in Ontario, Canada, International Line. Jeremy, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Good evening, gentlemen. Good morning, I guess.
Yeah.
I just had a quick question, and sure. Then I'll hang up and take my answer off air. With regards to one of Malachi Martin in this sort of field, I've been studying him, reading his books, and he certainly has done a lot of work. There's been credible mentions that he was actually CIA at one point, working for the CIA as an operative, and and that there was something to do with the alien agenda. When you were talking about the powers to be, what came to my mind right away was not the United States, but the Vatican, and what's down in those archives,
Oh, they must have everything down there. First of all, also make sure you're listening tomorrow night, Jeremy, because we've got Father Gary Thomas on to pick up the slack and talk about many of the things that Father Malachi Martin talked about on this program. But the Vatican is a vast resource, L.A., and they may have tucked away things on extraterrestrials, just all kinds of stuff, don't you think?
Well, I do. Steve Quayle and Timothy Alberino with their film series have touched on that. They went down to Peru, and they talk about the Curicancha, which I've also visited. But they've done this amazing film, and it's a plug for Steve, but and Tim. I mean, these guys have gone the extra mile, and the Vatican holds many secrets, many, many, many secrets. And
more than we know, absolutely. That's for sure.
And the fact that they have the telescope, and Tom Horn has done the research on this, the Lucifer telescope, they know something's up. They're looking at something. The fact that they backpedaled from the Fatima apparitions, they know something's up. And I think, as Father Funa says, if an extraterrestrial, he's ready to baptize him. So Chris Putman came on the record in one of our Watchers series stating that the Vatican seems to be ready to embrace an alien savior. And Tom Horn, I know, has also talked about that, as well as Steve Quayle and Timothy Alberino. So, look, all of us who are in this research are looking at the Vatican and wondering why they're positioning themselves. What do they know that they're not telling the people?
Exactly. What do they know? And how could they come up with a telescope? Observatory called the Lucifer.
There you go. Why name it that, guys?
My God. Even though it's an acronym,
yeah,
it still spells out Lucifer.
Bingo. Not a good thing.
No. Karen in Southwick, Massachusetts. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning to both of you.
You too.
Long-time listener. Mr. Marzulli, let's go back to Genesis. Let me ask you a question about this. Do you believe there was a civilization before God put Adam and Eve on this planet as purebreds?
Yeah, I do, and I realize that's a very controversial position.
Right. Okay.
Some Christians,
I do too.
I do believe that.
Let's go back and let's look at Genesis. Was the apple the way the Bible tells it? Was the apple? I think it was a bad seed. I think it represents seed. The tree of life represents probably your DNA. Am I wrong in saying this?
Well, it's again, there's
a lot of symbolism there, really.
The old ancient text from Mesopotamia, you can go way back and you get so mind-boggled in all this that you don't know what's right and what's wrong anymore, what to believe. But anyway, what I'm saying is, in regard to the Nephilim, when the angels were thrown down to the earth, and I believe that maybe Eve, the perfect human beings, Adam and Eve, I believe she had relations with what was on this planet along with her or before her, and that bad seed came out of some kind of relationship other than Adam. What do you think of that?
Have you ever read the Book of Enoch?
Which is an amazing book all by itself, Ellie.
Yeah. I would suggest read the Book of Enoch, and you'll see with the paradigm that I hold to. I think even Adam and Eve were not contaminated, but the Genesis 6, it says when the daughters were born to men, and the angels saw that they were beautiful, they lusted after them. And there's a pact of angels which come down on land on Mount Hermon, which is still in existence today, and they do the unthinkable. And all that's written in the Book of Enoch. It's a fascinating read, very short little book, found with Dead Sea Scrolls, quoted 70 times in the Tanakh, quoted in the New Testament also. And I think it's an amplification, a window into the antediluvian world. Highly recommend that book, the Book of Enoch.
L.A., give Richard Shaw our best, my friend.
I certainly will.
And just continued success to what you do. And thanks for enlightening so many people.
Well, George, thanks for what you do. You're a bastion of truth, and you're the only show really like it that we can, people like myself and Richard and others can come on the show and get this information out to the folks. Thank
well,
you.
Well, and you've got a blank check on the show. You know that.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Okay. Be well. L.A. Marzulli, his website, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. But for those of you who like to write down the name of websites, it's his name, lamarzulli.net. And I'll spell it, L-A-M-A-R-Z-U-L-L-I. He's quite a person. On our next show, we'll be talking with Father Gary Thomas about exorcisms, and Joshua P. Warren joins us as well. And then, of course, we've got a great show for you in store for Friday, too. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.